Now, you might, if you've been around Lake Hills, you might recognize my last name, Richard. Pastor Mac is Mac Richard. That's not a coincidence. I am his offspring. We also look fairly alike. And I never take the chance to talk about kind of who he is because it can be kind of weird. You know, it's my dad. I'm a little biased. Like, okay, yeah, you're the son. You have to say that. But I do want to let you know the kind of man that is the pastor and leader of this church. And I've had the incredible blessing of getting to see him pastor for the last 20, almost 8 years as I grew up in the house and now have the incredible blessing of getting to work with him in it. And the man of character that he is, his strength of integrity, did he discipline a little too hard? Sure, but that's not for you. That's really just for me. But seriously, he is so incredibly faithful. He loves y'all as a church. His mind and heart don't really have an off switch. He is thinking about y'all and praying about y'all literally all throughout every day of the week and into the night. And so I would feel remiss if I didn't let you know that God has his hand on this place, and what God is doing in this church and through this church is so phenomenal, and I feel so honored that we get to be led in that by our pastor, who I also get to call Dad. So that's pretty freaking cool, I think. But another thing that I've learned in my life, in my 28 years, as I grow older and prayerfully wiser, we're going to start with something fairly profound today. We're jumping right into the deep end. So if you're taking notes, you're going to want to write this down. I don't know if you've noticed this yet, but if you have not, let me enlighten you. This is something I realized I had an epiphany recently. People are different. I'm just going to let that sit for a little bit. I want you to process that, take it in, just woo. I know it's radical. But people are different. Everyone is wired a little bit differently. You have some cat people, and then you have people who are saved, and you have people who prefer vacationing, and people who prefer going on trips, and those are very different. Trips have itineraries. Vacations are for rest and relaxation. Vacationing is correct. These are all, of course, opinions. Then you have people who, when they put the toilet paper, they make it roll over the front as opposed to under the bottom. That is a moral issue. You have people who really want to dive into sports and go all athletic, and you have people who really just only want to look at books and get all intellectual. And of course, there's overlap between them. No one is 100% on any of these issues necessarily, but people are wired differently. This is something that has never been more true to me than in my last year and a half of marriage, and specifically in the last 4 months of parenting. My wife is a planner. She likes to know how the day is going to go. She likes to have her routine. She likes to know what we're doing next week, what we're doing a month from now, what we're doing 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Whereas I don't know what I want for breakfast. And I'm okay with that. But you have two completely different people who I've noticed just anecdotally tend to kind of marry each other. And ways that they respond and react to situations completely, completely differently. Even if Abby and I are in the exact same situation, her point of view would be to take a step back, list out the steps in order to get it fixed, whereas my point of view is let's put our head down and go and figure it out as we go along. And thank God I married her. But what's constant and consistent between it all is that Abby and I both come up against situations we don't know how to handle. Whether you are a planner or, let's call it what it is, impulsive, You come up against situations and life stages that you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how to handle it because you haven't been through it yet. And it's in those times that I am so, so grateful for the Word of God and for Scripture to be a consistent sounding board and wash over our hearts and our minds to give us the perspective that God has that is beyond our own perspective. The last couple of weeks, we've been in this series, Unfiltered, a study of the book of Psalms. And Psalms is so jam-packed with so much life and feeling and emotion and metaphor, figurative language on how to navigate this crazy thing that we all navigate. But there's also so much practicality in it. There's so much that we can pull from it and actually put into practice in our lives. And Bill Jones and Pastor Andrew Tremonti have done a great job in the last month of unpacking a lot of those. And today, we're going to be looking at Psalm 46. And Psalm 46, I think, is especially important when chaos happens, when those situations that you just don't really know how to handle hit you square in the face. And Psalm 46, it starts strong. It comes right out in verses 1-3. It says, God is our refuge and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. So we will not fear when earthquakes come and the mountains crumble into the sea. Let the oceans roar and foam. Let the mountains tremble as the waters surge. Man, isn't that great visual? Isn't that great language that it's talking about? We won't fear when the earthquakes come and the mountains crumble into the sea. Let the oceans roar and foam. Let the mountains tremble as the waters surge. Let it all happen. Let the chaos surround us because God is our refuge and our strength. What I love about a lot of that language is it's all nature. It's all stuff that happens around, stuff that we can't control. And one thing that if you've been alive for 20 minutes, you know, chaos is inevitable. Chaos is inevitable. Your chaos might look different from my chaos. My chaos looks different from my parents' chaos. But chaos happens. Chaos can be a good thing. Chaos can be, oh, I just got into a college in a state that I've never been to, and so I have to go figure this out, this whole life thing on my own. Chaos might be, oh, I made a team that I didn't think I was going to make, and so now I have to work harder at it than I thought I was ever going to have to work. But chaos can also be tough. Chaos could be, oh, the diagnosis came back and it wasn't what we were praying for. Chaos could be, my wife and I, or my husband and I, just can't get on the same page, and it feels like we're growing apart and the marriage is falling apart. Chaos could be that your child starts making decisions that you wouldn't have for them, and now you barely even recognize who they are. Chaos can surround you in the absolute worst way or in the best way. But when that chaos does come, you have two options. You have two options. Option one, you can become consumed by the chaos. Now, whether you're a planner like Abby or you're impulsive like me, the fact of the matter is if you try to take it head on by yourself, it will consume you. If you let yourself get wrapped up in it and you bare knuckle it and say, hey, I'm gonna figure this out because this is handed to me, so I've gotta work my way through it alone, you will be consumed by the chaos. One of the most misquoted and misinterpreted verses in the Bible is when people say, hey, God won't give you more than you can handle. Hey, you got this. If God's given it to you, it's because he knows you can handle it. God won't give you more than you can handle. It sounds so nice, and I so badly wish it were true, but it's just not. It's not accurate. It's not real. It's not theologically consistent. What that misquote is referencing is a verse that says, God will not allow any man to be tempted beyond what he can handle. But if you look in the Bible, there is story after story after story of people facing more than they can handle. If you've lived any time, you know there will be times that you come up against things that you cannot handle. Things that you weren't wired just to work through. Things that you weren't created to carry on your own. Burdens that are breaking your back and your shoulders, and it's killing you. You're becoming consumed by the chaos, and you don't know how to get out of it. But option two is to rest in God's refuge. Psalm 46 starts strong. It says, God is our refuge and our strength. It gives us the solution before it even explains the problem. Rest in God's refuge. I mean, man, a refuge is a safe place, a haven. A refuge is protection. A refuge is peace. A refuge is calm and away from the chaos. Rest in God's refuge. Don't allow yourself to be consumed by the chaos. To jump ahead a little bit, verses 6 and 7 say, the nations are in chaos and their kingdoms crumble. Feels fair. God's voice thunders and the earth melts. The Lord of heaven's armies is here among us. The God of Israel is our fortress. The God of Israel is our fortress. Let's break that down just a little bit. I don't want to dive too deep, but I do. The word Israel, the name Israel, literally means wrestles with God. It literally means wrestles with God. And so it's a group of people, us now, who go back and forth with God and continually oppose God by our actions and our decisions. But still, God says, hey, I am your God and I still am your fortress. A fortress is a place that protects something. A fortress is a place where you go for safety. And God looks at us who continually oppose him and says, hey, I'm still your fortress. Hey, I'm still here with you. Hey, I'm still here for you. Let me protect you. The God of Israel is our fortress. But how often do we go looking for things outside of that fortress? How often do we just figure, oh wait, I'm big enough now, I'm bold enough now, I can go after what I really want, because now I know enough, I'm smart enough, I can decide what's best for me, I can strive to do what's actually best, and I don't really need that fortress thing anymore. I don't really need that whole God thing anymore because I've got this. C.S. Lewis was an incredible theologian and author. He wrote a bunch of great literature. And in his book, Mere Christianity, he says this. He says, God cannot give us a happiness and peace apart from himself because it is not there is no such thing. That happiness and peace that you're leaving your fortress to go after, that happiness and peace that you're striving for, whether it's that next job promotion, that next pay bump, whether it's that next team, whether it's whatever it is, that happiness and peace cannot be found apart from God because it does not exist apart from God. He is the author and perfecter of our faith. He is the source of that peace. He wired us and knows what true happiness, joy, peace, all of that fulfillment that we're searching for, he is the answer. The fortress is the answer. But still, we continue to rush around and hop on our hamster wheels and run at a pace that we were never meant to run. And God's saying, whoa, 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 whoa. Chill. You're good. I got you. In fact, in verse 10 in Psalm 46, it says, be still and know that I am God. I will be honored by every nation. I will be honored throughout the world. Be still and know that I am God. It's a pretty strong command to know that he is God. What does that mean? Know that I am God. Okay, God, you are God. I am not God. You know better. I don't. So God, I will listen to you. God, I know that you are God. Check, got it. Well, it's not just one command. There's two commands in there. Be still and know that I am God. The first command is to be still. When was the last time you were still? You weren't planning what you were going to have for lunch. You weren't thinking about tomorrow's schedule. You were just still and rested in who God is, how good God is, what God has done, what God is doing, what God is continuing to do, free of distraction, free of restlessness. And you were just still. It's hard. It's tough. We're conditioned for the opposite. With everything that's going on, we don't know how to be still anymore. We no longer know how to be still. But that second command is to recognize God's sovereignty. Recognize the authority and power of God. And by the way, one of the most important ingredients to be able to be still is that second command. Once you recognize that God is sovereign, once you recognize that God is in control, once you truly rest in that fact, the stillness is able to come. You're able to be still because you know that it's not all going to fall apart. You know that God's got it. God is taking care of it. In other words, stop exhausting yourself and start exalting God. We live in a world that praises people who work 25 hours a day, 8 days a week. And it's not how we were built. That's not how we were wired, how we are wired and created as humans. We're running ourselves ragged. And what's happening now is our kids and students are watching us run at this pace, and they're expecting that that's the pace they're supposed to run when they're 7 years old. And so we need to take a step back and stop exhausting ourselves and start exalting God. Yes, for ourselves, because that's how we're wired, but also for the next generation, for the people that are watching us, that are seeing us, and who we're modeling for. They've noticed a trend in the last several years and across some of the major sports, with some more significant injuries than ever before. And so we're going to run through a couple of those and then talk about it for just a minute. But in the MLB, Tommy John surgeries are up 170% since 2010. 170% in the last 15 years. And Tommy John surgery is a surgery that comes of need from overuse and overwear of your throwing arm. And so that's why people are needing more and more surgeries, is because there's more and more overuse. In the NFL, Achilles ruptures are 4 times more likely since 2000. In the NBA, from 1990 to 2020, they averaged about 1 Achilles tear per season. The exact number is 1.36. In 2025, they had 7 Achilles tears, and 6 of those players are under 30. And a torn Achilles is typically for a veteran or an older player because they've been in the league, they've been under the wear and tear, their body can't handle it anymore, so it just pops. And they had 6 under 30 this year. It's become a conversation to the point where a lot of people are trying to diagnose and analyze, why is this happening? Why are injuries and season-ending injuries up across the board when we have more information, when we have more medical treatment, when we have better trainers, when we have better nutrition, when we have better everything? Why are people getting hurt more? One of the prevailing theories is overuse and over-specialization too young. And so kids from an earlier age are playing year-round the same sport, and so they're going through the same movement, and they're overwearing the same muscles, and they get to the point of overuse to when they actually get to the leagues that they've been working their whole lives for, their bodies break down. It's a trend that they've noticed in athletes in recent years, but it's also happening to all of us mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. We're so used to running at a pace that we were not designed to run at, to where now we as a society have the fidgets and have chronic restlessness to the point where we are overusing and overwearing the bodies and the minds and the hearts that we've been given and not taking the proper time to fuel and recharge. Because we're not being still. We no longer know how to be still. Now, please hear what I'm saying and don't hear what I'm not saying. What I'm not saying is don't work hard. I'm not at all advocating for a lack of work ethic and a lack of grit. I actually believe that those are hugely important. In fact, grit is the number one future indicator It's the number one indicator of future success found in children. Work ethic and grit matter. Pouring your heart and soul into something is good. But at what cost and to what length? We have to take time to step back. Stillness is not laziness. Stillness is not laziness. It's a refusal to panic. I think if we get down to the core of why we run at such the speed that we're running, it's because we're afraid of not living up. It's because we're afraid and we feel like it's all on us. It's because we shoulder more than we ever should shoulder and we start to panic that our life is going to fall apart or that our status won't be the same or that we won't be perceived as what we think we should be perceived at. And so we start to panic and run a race we were never meant to run, at a pace we were never meant to go, and forget that God is God and we are not. That be still command is a great reminder of 1 John 5 that Pastor Mac mentioned in the prayer moment. God's commands are not burdensome. They're for our good. That command to be still is for our good because he knows how we're wired. He knows what's happened to us. He knows what our tendencies are. And in fact, there's even science that backs up stillness. There is science behind what just a deep breath can do for your body. So right now, everyone, we're gonna go four counts in through our nose and then four counts out through our mouth. Ready? In two, three, four. Out two, three, four. That's a deep breath for those of you that haven't taken one in a while. Now let me tell you what that did in your body just now. The benefits of a deep breath. Number one, it activates your parasympathetic nervous system. Your parasympathetic nervous system, which your nervous system has two kind of branches. You've got your sympathetic nervous system, and that's your fight or flight. That's when panic comes up. Oh, we're squaring up. We're going to blows. Or you run away, whichever. But that's your fight or flight. That's your adrenaline, your sympathetic nervous system. Your parasympathetic nervous system, that's your rest and digest. Your nervous system literally begins to be more restful. The other thing it does, it balances your oxygen and carbon dioxide, the chemicals in your body that help you live and that you produce are balanced when you take a deep breath. The other thing it does, it shifts your brain activity from your amygdala to your prefrontal cortex. Your amygdala is your fear center in your brain. That's where the panic lives. That's where all the stress lives. That's where everything that tells you nothing's going to be okay, that's where that's coming from, is your amygdala. When you take the time to take a deep breath, it moves your brain activity to your prefrontal cortex. That's what gives you the discernment, the perspective, the ability to know that, hey, it's going to be okay. It allows you to think logically. It allows you to actually process information. And it's what, hopefully, we're making most of our decisions out of rather than our amygdala. There's science behind what stillness does for us physiologically. Now, I know Psalms is great language and great metaphor, great figurative language with visuals that are amazing, but I'd be willing to wager there are a few of us in here that are saying, hey, Joe, that's real fine for poetry and all, but it's not real. That's not how life works. That's not what happens when rubber meets the road. To which I would point you to the New Testament and a story of Jesus. Jesus, at this point, is with all of his disciples. They're on a boat in the middle of waters, and the waters are raging around them. The wind is howling. The water is pouring down from the sky, and the disciples are flipping out. And in Luke chapter 8, verse 24 and 25, it says, and they went and woke him, saying, Master, Master, we are perishing. Man, how many of us in here right now, just on some level, are like, bro, I'm perishing. I can't take it anymore. And he awoke Jesus and rebuked the wind and the raging waves, and they ceased, and there was a calm. He said to them, where is your faith? And they were afraid, and they marveled, saying to one another, who then is this that he commands even winds and water, and they obey him? Where is your faith? And that's a great question. Jesus asked the disciples 2,000 years ago, but I think that question rings so poignant right now. Where is your faith? Is your faith in yourself? Are you so confident that you can take on whatever comes your way that you don't even need anything else, that you don't need anybody else, that you're like, hey, everybody come to me because I got it? Is your faith in a situation? Is your faith in your relationship? You're like, oh, no. As long as I've got her, we're all good. Everything's fine as long as we're side by side. Is your faith in your status? Oh, as long as I've got my job, everything will work out. Or is your faith in Christ? Is your faith in the one thing that is constant, the one thing that never fails, the one person who will never let you down, the one person who, no matter how much of yourself you give, will never take advantage of it, the one person that died on a cross and rose again for you? Where is your faith? What's kind of a double-edged sword or two-sided coin is the fact that you never realize Jesus is all you need until Jesus is all you have. You don't realize that Jesus is all you need until all you have is Jesus. But the fact is, the chaos is going to come. Your life is going to hit the windy seas. So where is your faith? What is it that you put your trust in, your hope in, your life in? Are you able to be still because you know that he is God? If you're sitting in here today and you feel the chaos, You feel the restlessness. You're running at a pace that you don't want to run at anymore because you know that you're shouldering more than you ever should have shouldered. You're carrying more than you should carry. And you're sitting here today and you're like, I just want to give it up. I'm done. I want to give it up to Jesus. I want to step into that fortress, that refuge, that strength that God promises and allows. We want to give you the opportunity to do just that. And so with every head bowed and every eye closed, if you're sitting in here and you're thinking, man, I'm ready. I'm ready to give it to God. I'm ready to quit shouldering it on my own. You can say this prayer or something like it silently between you and God. Just, God, I know that I'm carrying more than I need to carry. God, I know I've turned away from you too many times to count. But God, I believe you still invite me in. God, I know you still welcome me with open arms. And so God, today I'm choosing to step into that. God, I'm choosing to make that my own. God, to know that peace, that stillness. God, today I choose Jesus. And if that's you in this place and today was the first day you've made that choice, today is the first time you're choosing Jesus, I'm gonna ask you to boldly mark this moment by simply raising your hand in the air. Simply raising your hand and saying, I can't do it on my own anymore. I need Jesus. God, I pray for every single one in this place. I pray that you would watch over them, that you would be the fortress that you promised to be. And we've got a tradition around here where when you put your hands down, we put our hands together and say, welcome home. Welcome, welcome home.